This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. With proof that just a few degrees in temperature change can really change the attitude of most people out there. Brett Johnson here with us. Have you been outside lately, Brett?
Feels great out there. I love it.
It's amazing how much melted last night. It's 38 right now. It was 42 earlier today. I was was driving around and I was like, wow, this is nice. And the sun was out. It was melting. Isolated showers tonight, not snow showers, rain. Then isolated showers and partly cloudy. It's going to rain tonight. 40 today, 41 today, 40 tomorrow, 36, 33, 38. Definitely seems like we're going to, by the end of this week, and any day we get sunshine, that's going to melt off quickly because we're at that point now. It wants to melt. You know,
I guess late February. Yeah, it's not going to take much.
Well, the spring solstice is less than a month away now. Mm-hmm. So it's getting to the point where it wants to melt, and it feels magnificent out there. I did go on out. I tried. Have you ever heard of Detroit style pizza?
I have, actually.
All right. Have you ever had it before?
No, but I've seen it on menus before. Detroit style pizza. It's most certainly a thing.
I always, when I think of Detroit style pizza, I'm like, does that come with like scrap metal in it? You know, hey, look, a piece of a bottle. Delicious. No, it's just the way they make it. And it's kind of Chicago style, only it's actually a lot less oily. That's one of the things I can't really eat. Deep dish pizza anymore, just because most deep dish pizza is only like, well, we start off with 4 pounds of Crisco, and you know, it's just a little bit weighty. So I tried a little bit this weekend, and I'll get back to this in a little bit, but I went up to North Loop and the place called Rectangle, got some there, and I went home, sat down, ate that, quite delicious actually, not nearly the shrapnel you'd think it is. Actually, it was quite tasty. It was shockingly, I said, okay, Detroit has one thing then, I guess, you know.
Where did you get this from?
A place called Rectangle.
Rectangle, okay.
It was not bad. But so went home, I watched Nomadland. Have you seen this? Have you seen the previews of this? It's Frances McDormand, it's the movie, it's on Hulu. Have you seen
it? Oh, that might be why. Yeah, I'm not a Hulu subscriber.
No, it's not the best. As an evaluation, as a purely spec, you know, it's kind of one of those things that there's a lot of stuff on there that I'm not. Yeah, it's not high on my priority list. I'll be honest with you. But I went over there, and Frances McDormand and David Strathairn. It was like watching a freaking documentary. Now, I want to make sure you understand, this is a movie. This is a scripted film. They're so good in it. It just feels like it feels like, you know, any documentary, they're just following a regular person around with a camera. And it's unbelievable. Here's the other thing about that film, which is just amazing about Nomadland. There were about 50 points in that movie where they could have Patch Adams did up. Do you understand? You remember the movie Patch Adams? You know, and it's like, you know, and then they learned a life lesson. You know, one of those things?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, God. God, that movie is schmaltzy. Holy God. Ugh. It's like, you know, just getting an injection of insulin right there. Can't watch that movie. But they had multiple times in this movie, and it was so unapologetic in its decisions that it never really went down those schmaltzy paths that they clearly had, and they didn't. It was one of the most realistic films I've ever seen in my entire life. I highly recommend. I mean, I don't know about Hulu. I mean, really. It's a reach. It is a reach. Mm-hmm. The question here is, will they ever release it from that place and put it onto, you know, and move it to a different streaming service?
I wonder, well, who produced it? That's usually the question.
I don't know. I mean,
because it needs to be answered. Yeah.
That's the point. I mean, it's like you will. I highly doubt you'll ever see Hamilton on anything other than Disney Plus.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And but the reality is that's going to be an Oscar nominated film. So is your option then, considering most people are not going to go to a movie theater, or is the option then that you're going to go and you know and basically get a DVD, buy the DVD of it?
Yeah, that's not happening.
I would recommend it for this movie though. Holy gosh. I mean, they're Frances McDormand. It's funny. I watched Fargo with the kids because, you know, nothing when they get to the wood chipper. Oh, is that just happy? Come on in, kids.
Okay, so you're talking the movie, not the show.
Not the show, the movie, the original movie.
Right, yeah.
She is brilliant in that. I mean, everyone is. If you ever watched the old original Siskel and Ebert review of Fargo, they said, how in the world did they write scripts that just, it's like a human, you know, just, it's like, it's like it doesn't feel like a script. It feels like you're literally listening in on two people having a conversation. And granted, that was an exaggerated, oh, yeah, you betcha sort of thing. But the not only were my kids fascinated by the movie, which is a great movie. I mean, that movie is phenomenal. But when I pointed out where the embers used to be, where they filmed that scene, and then where the car dealership, they've remodeled the car dealership dramatically where that used to be. And they were kind of surprised because that was out on 394. They filmed a good chunk of it out on 394 there.
When did they get rid of that Embers?
That Embers went away. It's like an Evita or something like that. I don't know what it is. But it's, yeah, they tore down that Embers years ago. Yeah, it's a shame. Yeah, that's a shame. But, you know, and of course then the scene in the parking ramp with Steve Buscemi and the dad, I know I parked there, for God's sakes. It's like, oh, yeah, we all go up there and see where Steve Buscemi shoots the guy. It's right here. Here you go.
There's a nice movie. <It's> like,
and he takes one right in the old face, too. Oh God. Hey, kids. Hey, who wants ice cream? Afterwards, the Fargo tour of Minneapolis. Maybe we're onto something there. But God, she's just everything that woman is in is just freaking brilliant. I mean, there are just actors and actresses who are just beyond. And David Strathairn, do you remember him in Lincoln? Oh, who did he play in Lincoln's Cabinet? Oh, God. He wasn't Seward. He basically was in Lincoln. He was phenomenal. Not everything that guy is in is good. He even was in The River Wild with Kevin Bacon and Meryl Streep. Remember that he was in that movie. So it shows that if you give phenomenal actors, I'm going to guess they had a lot of leeway with the script, but there is not a single person in that entire movie that seems like they're an actor. And I kept having to remind myself, this is a movie. This is not a documentary. I highly recommend it. Hulu, I don't know.
Hulu's a little questionable for me there.
You do get Fargo, the TV series, which is quite good. You know, they right now have the Star Trek movies, the newer Star Trek movies. They're not bad. It's not much else. There's a lot of TV. Oh, they had that Palm Springs that also got nominated for, is going to get nominated for some movie Oscars with Adam Sandberg. That's a good movie. That's actually quite entertaining too.
You bring up an interesting point about all these award nominated movies. Yeah. How many people have actually seen these with no movie theaters, where if you don't have a subscription to that streaming service, you might not have seen it?
You know, it brings up an interesting point, something we're going to talk about at the beginning of the 5 o'clock hour in regards to these movies, because once again, I mean, the people that vote on them will all get a copy of a DVD or something of that nature. But the reality is that a movie that's on Netflix, will that ever go to Hulu? Will that ever, you know, Parasite is on Hulu, which is a phenomenal film, you know, the Oscar winner from a few years ago. That's an amazing film. Will that ever show up on a HBO Max? Will it ever show up on some of the other ones? And let's face it, some of these streaming services are really reaching, especially, let's just call it Peacock and the CBS All Access. Is that Paramount now?
What's the one that was, the big Super Bowl advertised?
That's Paramount.
That one's a stretch right
there.
Come on.
You know, Nora the Explorer, come on, really? Ooh, I get to watch CBS this morning again? Ooh, where do I pay? Not all streaming services are created equal, but at the same time, when you have one of these, like Apple TV, I'm not going to get Apple TV. And I guarantee you they're going to have Oscar or Emmy nominated product on there. That's just, you're basically, well, I guess I'm not watching that. Because they're not going to, I'm not going to go to a movie theater. There's no way on the planet I'm going to a movie theater right now. There's no way on the planet I'm going to go eat inside a restaurant. I get food to go. And I'm not going to be changing that anytime soon. So your option is, I guess, then just to buy it on DVD. And so, there are very few that I'll go that extent. I did buy the Chernobyl one, the series they did for HBO. That was amazing. That was quite good and worth it because of the way it was, just because it's almost a historical document, really. So it's one of those that kind of elevates past. But Nomadland, find a way to watch that and just be stunned. Just be stunned. It could be the best acted movie I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, Dan's back here helping us produce. He was nodding his head, too. He just saw that this weekend.
You did?
Loved it, yeah.
Well, get out of the way. Get him up here. No. He and I can talk the rest of the show about that. We'll get back to the Golden Globes soon, because there's something about that. We'll talk about that at the beginning of the 5 o'clock hour. Terry Von Oot's going to join us. We're going to be talking about Terry Zila. Tori Van Oot, of course, with Axios. She's going to join us. We got a few stories that involve the pandemic that we got to talk with her about. That's coming up at 4:30. Other things to get to as well. But I want to start going back to, I went up to North Loop to go get this pizza on Saturday. Wild experience up on North Loop. If you don't know where this is, basically, you go to Hennepin Avenue at Washington and don't go towards Nicollet, go the other direction. That's North Loop. I mean, if you're kind of up in that area there. It's quirky, it's fun, and apparently they don't have a pandemic up there. At least that's what I saw. Now, I'm not saying that people in the restaurants and bars that I was up there, didn't have en masse. Many of them did. But the streets were packed with people, and hardly anyone was wearing a mask. And I sat there in my car and I'm like, wow, this is kind of, to a point, it was a nice reminder. But yeah, I remember what things were like before, February of last year. Holy God, look at this. But then I say to myself, how safe do you guys think this is right now? Because it's not. It is not safe out there. It is not a place where... I would not recommend you do this. Just walk up and down the streets, because it was large groups of people meeting other large groups of people, and no one was wearing a face mask, or their face mask was completely down below their chin. And I felt like, okay, welcome to super spreader land. Come on, North Loop, you guys could do better than that. I mean, it's I know you can't really regulate this when people are out on the street. There's always that never-ending question. When you're out on one of the more popular parks, say Bidet Makoska or Harriet, Lake of the Isles, Nokomis, Phelan, you're maybe going down hiking down in Sweet Hollow or something like that. Do you wear a mask even though most of the time you're not going to be around someone? Well, the problem with North Loop was there was really no way you could walk from building to building without experiencing having to walk through a crowd of people, the vast majority of whom were not wearing masks. That's a little... Pandemic's not over, guys. And I understand, you think you're young and you're invincible, and that's great. There are plenty of people who are, 20 and younger who have died that would warrant me to say, you know what, I don't even want to get sick. I don't want my family members sick. I don't want my coworkers sick. I don't want my neighbors sick. I get it. We all want to go back to the safe world, and I'm gonna say the same exact thing I said with Alibi, with the interchange down in Albert Lea, and all these other places, is that they're smart and they're stupid. Now, granted, you're not a business owner who's being just a selfish jackass who's basically just trying to make a political point by trying to kill off some of your employees and customers. I mean, that's on you. But at the same time, just because we're starting to vaccinate people, this is not over in any capacity whatsoever. And if you do not actually step back and realize that this is, if you don't take this seriously, this is going to get far worse again. Well, I can't help you. But for goodness sakes, wash your hands, socially distance, wear a freaking mask, and do not just sit there and be in a large crowd. As a matter of fact, I'll tell you what, we'll come on back. We'll take a break. Come on back. We'll do the Minnesota's coronavirus update. Plus, when we get with Tori Van Hoot, we're going to talk to her about some of the stories in Axios that have to deal with the coronavirus as well. That's coming up here in a few minutes as well. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. We'll talk on the streets as you may go solo. By the way, if you are watching the show, it's radio for your eyes. You can watch the show by going to Facebook and watching it on the AM 950 Facebook page or the Progressive Citizen X Matt McNeil Show page, which is now over 8,000 followers. Thank you very much. Really, what are you expecting from me? Seriously, what? Thank you. I appreciate it. I got Mike Lindell here, right here in the studio with me. I guess I hit him right in that spot. Maybe you should pull that pillow a little bit lower there, Mike. Anyway, I'll get to the Lindell cutout here in just a second because it's a day that Brett and I have been predicting here for Lindell for the last month and a half. And unfortunately, it's finally come to fruition. That comes up here in a little bit. All right. 952-946-6205. Minnesota health officials are reporting 39 COVID-19 group outbreaks of customers in bars and restaurants so far in 2021 amid otherwise improving measures of pandemic activity. So once again, 39 outbreaks at various restaurants across the state. The latest social outbreak data released Monday by the Minnesota Department of Health also showed 85 outbreaks related to sporting activities, which are defined of at least two cases of the same team or sports team that can't be traced to other common infected sources. State health officials remain concerned that outbreaks involving large group events could upset Minnesota progress with COVID-19, just as they did last fall. On the encouraging side, the positivity rate of COVID-19 diagnostic testing has dropped to 3.6%, the lowest rate since June 24th, which was back when things weren't nearly as bad. But this goes back to the North Loop comment I was making, is that there's a lot of people that now that we're vaccinating, oh, pandemic over. That's what they're saying. Oh, it's over. I mean, how many Republicans are screaming, open the schools? You can't do that. You need at least 70% of the population to get vaccinated before you can really start unwinding all this stuff. And until that time, all you're doing is giving people false hope that there should be some sort of open rule here. And it's somewhat terrifying, the amount of people that seem to feel as if, oh, we're back to normal. We're not back to normal by any means or stretch of the imagination. It's good news so far, but once again, you're getting a lot of these groups, you're getting restaurants, you're getting sports teams. We got to be careful with this. Wash your hands, socially distance, wear a freaking mask. To a woman, I was doing laps over at the Edina Dome, woman with a mask down below her nose. I mean, what are you doing? That's not wearing a mask. Please. Hospitalizations for COVID-19 have declined dramatically as well in Minnesota, and more good news, where 235 inpatient beds were filled on Sunday with patients suffering from the infectious disease caused by coronavirus. The latest hospital figure is the lowest since mid-September and compares with the peak of 1864 COVID patients hospitalized in Minnesota on November 29th. How many of those were part of the Republican Party in Minnesota? Nah. 48 COVID-19 patients requiring intensive care on Monday in Minnesota hospitals on Sunday was the lowest recorded total since early April. The state health department on Monday also reported one COVID-19 death, 561 newly diagnosed infections. The daily totals, which are typically low on Monday due to less reporting and diagnostic activities on the weekends, bring the state's toll to 6,433 deaths and 479,591 known infections. Can I bring this up? I like how the media all of a sudden, now that there's, you know, kind of Trump's no longer in charge, put out the daily totals. I mean, I've had to remind people that Mondays usually are total, but the mentality up until Trump left office was, hey, look, here they are, Monday's numbers. Things are looking great. Only to have Thursday, Friday, Saturday numbers just scare the living bejesus out of you. Now that Trump's out of office, it's like, hey, the daily totals, which by the way, are typically low on Monday, so don't get too excited now. Don't get too excited. Holy crepes, no. Well, I appreciate you being honest now, but why weren't you honest back then? And that's where you should have been honest. Governor Walz and state leaders have taken a variety of steps over the past month in response to improving COVID-19 metrics, expanding indoor capabilities of bars, restaurants, and entertainment venues, and calling for some form of in-person classes at schools the state on March 8th. In the state by March 8th, reportable outbreaks in bars and restaurants are defined in Minnesota as involving five people. Five people with COVID-19 from unique households that only visited the same establishment in the past month. None of the reportable outbreaks were involved more than 10 such cases, which is good. Health officials noted that major difference when compared to the risk of group outbreaks last summer to the continued distribution of COVID-19 vaccine. I mean, last summer, like the Togo Rodeo, holy God. I was reading a report on that. That probably infected thousands, hundreds for sure. Hundreds for sure, probably thousands there. And the same thing happened with Mardi Gras. One of the reasons why Mardi Gras, they had to cancel. Remember, Louisiana was one of the first states to get really crippled by coronavirus. It was Mardi Gras. That's how it started spreading. State estimates more than 41% of senior citizens in Minnesota have received at least one dose of vaccine. The state reported Monday that 759,747 people in Minnesota have at least gotten the first of the two doses. 356,911 of them have completed the series, which is good. Needs to be better. People 65 and older have suffered 89% of the COVID deaths so far. Walz's office on Monday, and I want to make sure everyone hears this, okay? Walz's office on Monday also announced that Hy-Vee is joining the Federal Pharmacy COVID Vaccination Partnership out there as well, along with Walmart and Thrifty White. A release from the governor's office said that Hy-Vee will offer vaccination appointments for senior citizens in the coming days. We'll receive roughly 10,000 doses to administer this week. State leaders urge all Minnesotans, regardless of age, to register with the vaccine connector, which will notify them once they are eligible for vaccination opportunities in Minnesota. So regardless of how old you are, regardless if you have a pre-existing condition, get registered. And then you'll be able to find out when you are ready to get a vaccine. Because I'll be blunt, I think the way things are going here in Minnesota, there's a decent chance, I'm relatively good health, 52 years old, don't have any pre-existing conditions. No one in my family has a pre-existing condition that would warrant pushing us to the front of the line. I'm going to guess that maybe there might be even a chance by May here, we might be getting calls for that first dose, which would be great. But once again, take care of the teachers, take care of the frontline workers, get them all done first. I can go after them. For God's sakes, get the teachers and the bus drivers. Get the bus drivers too. Get them vaccinated immediately. This is called common sense, folks. It's called common sense. 952-946-6205. By the way, I will link to the story. The Star Tribune has this out. There is a link here that will get you the information you need on where you go get registered. But once again, they want everyone to register for the vaccine. They'll let you know when it's available for you. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Tori Van Oot from Axios Twin Cities will join us when we do return. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, is the Matt McNeil Show. Tori Van Oot's kind enough to join us. Of course, Axios Twin Cities is where you'll find her. If you're not subscribed, you need to be. Tori, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Hey, thanks for having me.
How are things going over there? I know you guys, Axios is such a great news source. I know that we are one of their local metros that they've launched into. How has it been going for you?
We are so floored and thrilled by the response we've gotten. I just tweeted today that we have over 38,000 subscribers.
Wow.
Who have joined us for our free daily newsletters in the month. And anybody who wants to sign up can sign up at axios.com/local. But we're getting great feedback, and I just want to emphasize, I love reader emails and feedback, as I know you love your callers and Facebook feedback too. It just helps us do our job better. So we're having fun so far, and I hope our readers are too.
It's a great way to, the way they deliver the news is just top notch. It gives you all the important details very quickly. You definitely want to follow Axios Twin Cities. And once again, we'll put out the link for everyone to go to sign up for that newsletter. It's a free newsletter, and it gets you all the news you really need here. Axios, of course, a large organization. They have Axios on HBO. You posted a clip from Axios on HBO that I want to definitely talk about to start with, because I was just talking about the latest coronavirus update here in the city and in the state. You have a clip there where National Institute of Health Director Francis Collins, he lays it out there that basically the politicization of the face mask that was done by the Trump administration, That even though that he was talking out of both sides of his mouth on this. On one side, he was saying wear face masks. On the other side, he was making a mockery of it. But the reality is that we're starting to realize that politicization of that basically caused probably not only thousands of more people to get sick, but also likely quite a few more people to die as well.
Yeah, that's right. And this is something we've kind of heard from health experts and epidemiologists all along, concerns about this, and it was just the latest way of addressing it. And we're still seeing surveys because of some of this politicization, partisan breaks, right, with more Democrats saying that they're wearing a mask all or some of the time versus Republicans. And we're turning the corner here on the pandemic, but this issue isn't over. What we hear over and over again from public health experts is cases are going down, vaccinations are going up, but we still need to be wearing masks to curb the spread, especially of these new variants. So, even though 2020 is behind us in some of this rhetoric, the impact could be lasting.
I think the saddest, and hands down, I actually think the saddest story from last year was the nurses in South Dakota, where they were working on the ICU wards and they had people dying and they were begging them to call loved ones to say goodbye, at least make sure they talk to their loved ones. And the patients who were dying of coronavirus were screaming at the nurses, "This is a hoax. This isn't real." When you politicize something of this nature, I don't know if we're ever really going to be able to undo this, because this is, granted, coronavirus is the beginning of this, but the reality is that there have been people in the last 15 or 20 years or so, starting with the anti-vaxxers and stuff, who have been putting a political spin on healthcare, even though that it's more based on, whether it's hopes and wishes or looking for a culprit, but not really based on science. And, what we saw with in your article, your point out here is that what we've got here is it's a perfect storm when you get to coronavirus and the pandemic, because that politicizing of the issue, it costs people lives.
Yeah, so it's been a really difficult situation, and you're right that there might be some kind of lasting effects and impact, and maybe hopefully some lessons learned for future crises. But some of the reach of dis and misinformation was quite strong on this one, and people really dug in. The messages that we keep on hearing again from state and federal officials is, please still wear your mask even if you've gotten vaccinated to keep this under control. And Governor Tim Walz and the director of the Department of Public Health here in Minnesota even said this weekend and today, if you want to go back to Target Field this summer, wear a mask. there's our stakes here at this point, not just for public health and keeping people safe and out of the hospital and hopefully not dying of COVID, but in terms of our reopening schedule is what we're hearing from leaders, helping everybody doing their part to keep cases down.
Well, and I'll say this is from what I've seen in regards to the numbers in Minnesota, especially compared to the states surrounding us, you can't deny that Minnesota's weathered this better. I mean, mm-hmm. we've just our per 100,000 rates on death and infections has been much lower. We've got that diagnosis rates down to what, 3.6 today. That's the latest on that. So that's the good news. We also have, you have a story directly out of Axios Twin Cities that talks about the Twin Cities itself. It has a bit of an economic advantage as we are hopefully looking to a brighter future down the road. We're going to be obviously looking at economic recovery. They have an economic advantage here in the Twin Cities. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, this is a story that my colleague Nick kind of took the lead on. But essentially, we were called out in this story from the Wall Street Journal as one of a handful of like Midwestern cities that, as you said, have done a lot better. Our unemployment rate was under 5% at the end of the year, which was lower than the national average. And really the factors are, you know, the same things that make our economy in non-pandemic times really strong, right? We have a super diverse economy. Think about all the different industries that are based here in the Twin Cities and surrounding areas in Minnesota. And there's a lot of white-collar jobs. And so all of those folks, you know, people who work in offices, lawyers, communications, banks, a lot of those people were able to still keep their jobs and just work remote really easily. We're also less reliant on tourism. So if you think about somewhere like Las Vegas or, you know, beach towns, you know, our tourism industry and our hotel industry and our hospitality industry, their struggles are real. They've been hit really hard and it's going to take a long time and a lot of support for them to recover. But they're not as big of a piece of the economic pie here as they are in some other places. So that's put us in pretty good position. Again, we still lost a lot of jobs, and a good chunk of them haven't come back. But it's brighter than here than it is in other places, which is a good thing and a credit to the economy that everybody, you know, here in Minnesota has helped build together.
You had a story, I believe it was on Saturday, and I wonder if we can tie that into here about credit scores. Uh-huh. It's shocking. It's shocking how high Minnesota's credit rating is compared to everyone else. I mean, we were, what, 7 points ahead of the next two states, Vermont and Wisconsin. You talk about that story as well, because, I mean, are we looking at just, I mean, our economic base. It's not just the fact that we didn't have like the tourism stuff, as you just mentioned, at least not as much. Obviously, all our best to the Mall of America, because I know that they're trying to get back up and running here.
Yep.
But at the same time, we seem to have also just had pre-pandemic the right recipe of economic, you know, viability in Minnesota, which when you go back to that credit score story, shows that we kind of were already in a good place to weather something like this a little bit better than other places.
Right. And just real quickly, on the Mall of America, you're right that they are, you know, in a tough spot. Their foot traffic, one estimate we found, is like down 50%. And we just saw last week they've been suing some of their tenants who can't afford rent. So, you know, things are really touch and go in a lot of this space still. But yeah, you're right. And maybe you can tell me, because I'm not a native Minnesotan. Maybe Minnesotans are just very responsible. I don't know. But according to the credit bureau Experian, one of the main reporting bureaus, Minnesota again topped the nation, and the credit scores went up amid the pandemic, and we're, as you mentioned, way ahead of everybody else. So that's a really good thing for, you know, financial health of citizens and ability to borrow, whether it's like a home loan or a car loan, and not have super high interest rates. It's a good thing. But yeah, maybe you have first. I have no idea what's driving this. Something about the responsibility of the Minnesotans. I don't know.
I think it's,
y'all are good at budgeting.
Well, I think it's twofold. If you know, and I really do. And I mean, obviously, I'm about to paint with a wide brush here, and so there are obviously exceptions to all this. Yeah. But I think you mentioned it in the first story about where we're coming out economically afterwards, and understandably our lost jobs is there. But you said white-collar jobs. We have a lot of people. The jobs in Minnesota generally pay pretty well. And my wife was a corporate headhunter for a while. And, you know, the rule of thumb is this, is that the hardest city to recruit into is Minneapolis-St. Paul, but the hardest city to recruit out of is Minneapolis, St. Paul. Huh. So once people get here, they don't want to leave. And that is the, that is one of the things which is really remarkable. And I think you touched on it. It's generally, we have a lot of good jobs, and we have, you look at a map of Minneapolis, and I'm once again painting with a wide brush, but there's a lot of suburbs which have a lot of people living still a relatively normal middle-class life, which is not something you see, I think, in a lot of other cities. The other side of it, I'll just go, it's practical. We don't buy Lamborghinis. Okay. And I'm not going to buy that car. I can't drive it for half the year. Oh, yeah. Now, granted, I mean, we have plenty of people that have snowmobiles and boats, which generally are limited. But at the same time, I think that...
Yeah, you need loans for those, too.
Well, yeah, but I think what you do is you don't get... You know, people are practical when they buy the stuff. And so, can I afford it? That's one of those questions, which obviously goes a long way with a credit score. But well, and once again, painting with a wide brush, there's plenty of people that don't do that. They just kind of use up credit cards. But at the same time, I think there's a practicality of, oh, well, I'd sure like to have a nice car or a motorcycle, but right. I could only use it for 6 months, 7 months. I'm not going to do that. And that kind of that might be helping Minnesotans right there.
Well, and cost of living here, as you mentioned, is pretty, you're not going to have the housing market here is very hot and prices are rising quickly, especially in Minneapolis and St. Paul. But in general, it's not like a New York or other places where it's, I mean, just totally stretching people beyond their means just to have a house in some cases. So
no, you're exactly right. And, you know, we are a good... Was it 70 points or is it 50 points over Mississippi is the last I went through the numbers with the links on your story. And I was looking through there. I was like, I think Mississippi is the last. And I'm like, we're like 60 points ahead of them on a credit score.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
How is that even possible? I mean, it really does show you that Minnesota has, you know, they've done well here. And I think you're also the diversity you bring up, too. I mean, the fact that we're not a one company town. We have so many different businesses here. And such a and many of them good paying jobs on a lot of different varieties that I think that diversity helps us a lot too.
Yeah, certainly, and access to credit, perhaps. Yeah, financial literacy, access to credit, that sort of thing. That was a fascinating one. We were really interested to find that. Yeah.
Well, speaking of money, let's talk about Bondingville really quick. Final topic here for you, Dayton has come on out with his plans here. Nothing too outrageous. I mean, he's not exactly going for the gusto here. He actually seems to have a fairly reasonable plan. Clearly, the sticking point's going to be that he wants money to help Minneapolis-St. Paul to rebuild after what happened after George Floyd. But the Republicans, who many of them represent counties who take much more back in taxpayer dollars than they give into the system, are refusing to give Minneapolis-St. Paul money. They don't want to do that. That's kind of the political point that they're trying to make, and they're going to try to make hay out on this to the election 2022. Do you think Dayton's got any chance? Obviously, the bonding bill is more of a negotiation topic, but and generally stuff that I think has no chance to get through sometimes does get through. Is there any chance that Minneapolis-St. Paul are going to see any money out of this, do you think?
Well, as you know, like you mentioned, this is the first salvo in what is going to be a negotiation that will probably end in the wee hours of the morning in late May when the legislature is about to adjourn. So as the size and that sort of thing, you know, the legislature actually usually does a bonding bill in even number of years. We had that really big kind of record bonding bill, public construction borrowing bill last fall that the legislature reached a deal on. We have heard from legislative leaders kind of an opening and an interest in doing a little bit more bonding this year. I mean, it helps, shovel-ready projects, ensure that construction projects and things like that are going to be going, needed infrastructure investments for everything from the University of Minnesota to water treatment plants. Bonding is kind of the state version of when you have, earmarks in Congress, right? Everybody can try to get a little something for their district. So it's a hard deal to put together, but there's also often eventually support for it. You're right. The big question is these proposals to get more money to help Minneapolis and St. Paul rebuild, whether it's money for trial security reimbursements or some of this other rebuilding. There has been opposition from, including in the Senate, Republican majority. And so we'll just see. But one thing to keep in mind is the legislature also has to balance the budget this year. It's constitutionally required to pass a budget bill. Bonding does require a supermajority. So you need, not only do you need Republicans in the Senate and Democrats in the House, but you also need the minority parties mm-hmm. in each chamber on board. So I think it's just one piece in this bigger puzzle that has to be finished by the end of session. It's another chip in the negotiations.
I said Dayton. It's Governor Walz, obviously.
Yeah.
Governor Walz, obviously. One of the things, though, that the Republicans have just shown on their hand, there is obviously there was a lot of funds that were given to businesses to help them get through the pandemic. And I remember when those funds were being given out, the people said, make sure you hold enough money for taxes. Well, now there's stories that are coming out that people are kind of, wait a minute here. We had to pay all this money in taxes. Well, first, I think that there is that was something that I had heard that when people were getting this, that you just have to make sure you talk to your tax professional about how much you need to hold back for this. But, you know, the Republicans clearly are going to want Walz to sign off on some sort of tax break for these businesses. And I can tell you right now, that might be enough to sweeten the deal to get Minneapolis-St. Paul the money if they can go on out there and find a way to give maybe a tax forgiveness or at least a major discount on the taxes involved with the government aid that was sent out at the beginning of the pandemic.
Yeah, I think that that's a good point, that a tax conformity law could really help. As you mentioned, the issue, I think, is that some of these forgivable loans are subject to state taxes.
Yes.
There's concerns about that. Yeah, so, and we've already seen some Republican senators. I think Senator Michelle Benson was tweeting about this maybe last week or over the weekend about how she wants, you know, the governor or the legislature to delay the collection of the tax or fix it. So that's another bargaining chip, right? And there are other tax cuts that Republicans might be interested in, other benefits for businesses, other issues. It's amazing the number of issues that legislators on both sides of the aisle can get onto the table for these negotiations. But yeah, I think that will certainly be in the mix. And then on bonding, you know, there's a lot of greater Minnesota projects that would like to see even more bonding dollars than they got last year, right? Mm-hmm. And another kind of interesting little twist on bonding is that the chair of what's essentially the bonding committee in the Senate is actually Senator Tom Bach, former DFL leader who has now left the DFL and is caucuses as an independent and made a deal with the Republicans. So, you know, look for some more support for Iron Range Project, where he's from, perhaps.
Well,
you know, as these negotiations continue. So there's a lot of different elements at play here.
Well, and you also have to remember, too, it's not just outstate, because as you said, they need to have metro area Democrats on board with this, and they're not going to just sign off on a bunch of Iron Range and outstate projects. They're going to have to give up something. You know, I will say this is at least with the split House and Senate, that we won't have the sneaky bills that we had under Kurt Dowd, where basically, you know, stuff was promised and they waited till the last second to try to jam it through. And when people found, wait, there's no money for Southwest Light Rail or something like that in here, then the House gavel closed and it ended up being a nightmare. At least if this bill does come on out, it will be with eyes open on it. We'll understand what's exactly in the bill. It won't be any last second surprises, at least hopefully not.
We'll see. I mean, that was before my time, what you're referencing, but the divided legislature didn't exactly do the best job at promoting transparency about the deals that were coming together last year throughout all the special sessions. So it was often a little bit of, oh, this big bill is coming out just before we vote on it. But hopefully, since they're not in special session and they're back to the special session, there'll be the committee process. There'll be, which they did have committees before, but you know, there'll be a little bit more sunlight on it. Here's hoping for that.
Oh, transparency. That's only when you're in the minority. Let's remember that. Tori Van Oot, of course, Axios Twin Cities. Tori, how does people get in touch and once again, sign up for that free newsletter?
Yeah, you can go to axios.com/local and sign up for our free local daily newsletter, Axios Twin Cities. We'd love to have you.
Tori, love having you on the show. Thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye. Tori Van Oot joining us, Axios Twin Cities. We'll take a break. Come on back. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Thanks, Tori. I appreciate that you coming on by. That's always nice to have her swing on by and talk about some of the stuff that they're covering over there. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. The bonding bill from when you look at what is being put out there by Governor Walz and what he's asking for, you know, it's pretty much a standard fair stuff. I'm not exactly expecting. When I told Tori, I was saying about, you know, at least we won't have the attempt to sneak something through with that you would see with Kurt Dowd. And reminder, okay, so this bill has to come out of the House. It gets voted on the House, then it goes to the Senate. That's how it has to go. If the Senate changes it, then it goes back to the House. Back when Kurt Dowd was the Speaker, reminder, he lied openly to numerous Democrats' faces and said Southwest Light Rail was going to be in the bill. They waited to the last second, just chucked a massive bill at everyone, said, vote now, vote now, and did not give people the chance to even look what was in it. But thank God for Senator Ron Latz, who is, by the way, my senator. Senator Ron Latz did get a copy of the bill, started looking through it, realized the Southwest Light Rail was not in there. And to give you an idea of how much Kurt Dowd himself was trying to hijack this, when the Senate found out, all they did was amend the bill, put the Southwest Light Rail line funding back into it. But Kurt Dowd, he threw a temper tantrum. He threw a temper tantrum. Oh, poor little boo-boo kitty. That's right. Poor little boo-boo kitty stormed out, gaveled the House closed, and ran. So, yeah, you gotta remember that when I'm thinking about that, the transparency I'm talking about is, well, at least we won't have Kurt Dowd at the head of this. But the reality is you're going to have to do something which a lot of people can't do now, and that is work together. And, you know, everyone has to work with everyone. That's probably not going to happen. Hour two of the show up next. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 504.
Oh, you're right. I'm keeping you on your toes there.
It's a little early, Brett. You didn't give me for a certain amount of time. I give you an extra 20 seconds here. That's going to cost you. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. So you and I were talking a little bit about movies and kind of with streaming services here. And it brings up a story, and I don't know if you saw this. It was out of the LA Times. I know Variety has covered this as well. And it has to do with the Golden Globe nominee of a show, Emily in Paris. Now, I'm going to presume you have not seen this show.
I have not, no.
You have not seen Emily in Paris. The show, it's schmaltzy. You know, it's kind of a Hallmark Channel movie sort of thing. It surprised me when it came up because I remember when they announced these, I said, I better go check this out. And it's a Netflix one, if I'm not mistaken. And so I watched, and it was nothing. I was like, really? This got nominated? Okay. February 21st, the LA Times published a report on alleged ethics violations and a culture of corruption within the Hollywood Foreign Press Association. These are the guys behind the Golden Globes. The highly influential 87 members. 87, that's it. 87 members of the nonprofit trade organization that runs and votes for the annual Golden Globe Awards for film and television. One element of the investigation is Hollywood's widespread perception that members can still be wheeled and dealed and swayed with special attention, with one awards consultant calling the Hollywood Foreign Press Association a nice target for awards campaigning because they're such a small body. In one example of the hotel stays, dinners, and other freebies the Globes voters receive, the Times wrote about how in 2019, Paramount Network treated over 30 Golden Globe voters to a lavish Emily in Paris set visit, which included a two-night stay at the five-star Peninsula Paris Hotel, where rooms currently start about $1,400 a night, and a news conference and lunch at a private museum filled with amusement rides dating to the 1850s where the show was shooting. And I actually think I know where that museum is at. I've been to Paris a few times when I was in the military. We used to go to Paris. It was, you know, like going to Chicago, really. I mean, from where we were, it was no big deal. So it was, I think I know where they're talking about here. So they basically gave him a private museum trip, hotel stays, wined and dined. Netflix bought the show Emily in Paris. It was initially going to go to Paramount Network before Netflix bought it in 2020. They treated us like kings and queens, said one member who participated in the junket, who was also attended by other non-Hollywood Foreign Press Association media. The news comes after many award season followers, including staff writer on Emily in Paris, expressed bafflement. Their own writers were like, what? Bafflement and disappointment that the middling series was nominated for Best TV Comedy over a more acclaimed series. It also comes after Norwegian journalist antitrust lawsuit against the Hollywood Foreign Press Association was dismissed in November. So basically, they bought them off for the two nominations. It sounds like it, at least.
Why haven't we joined the Hollywood Press?
Well, we're not. We're in Minnesota is not foreign. I got news for you here.
But I mean, that's a good deal, though.
Oh, do you remember? You remember the Olympics, the Atlanta Olympics deal? You remember what that was all about? Well, when the U.S. Olympic Committee was, from every account I've read about it, was going to pick Minneapolis-St. Paul.
Oh, this, yes, yeah.
Was going to pick Minneapolis-St. Paul, and then all of a sudden, the last second, I think it was like Coca-Cola and the Atlanta officials walk into a room with duffel bags filled with something. Yeah, you know, and I don't think it was Coke merch. And all of a sudden, hey, we're going with Atlanta instead, even though Minneapolis, by all accounts, had a far better proposal out for the Olympics. They went with Atlanta instead. So, no, this stuff happens. I mean, FIFA, the World Cup stuff. Where are we at with that World Cup that's supposed to take place in the middle of summer in the freaking desert?
Oh, you know what? That's actually going to be in December of next year.
It's still going to be like 100 and some degrees out there. Yeah.
And who wants to watch the World Cup at Christmas time?
Oh, and we're gonna have an open-air stadium. Good, because you want to have bacon with your players?
Yeah.
We're going to fry them up in the old stadium. Dear Lord. This is the problem, is that people will always try to find some way to cheat, to get consideration. And trust me when I say this, don't watch Emily in Paris. I mean, it's not that good. I mean, you know, there's other shows similar of ilk, which I'd highly recommend. But this is just, it makes no sense, but now it does. Now, all of a sudden, that whining and dining in a few hotel rooms, LA Times found out, and there you go. That's all it takes for you to get a Golden Globe.
The writer, though, still says, what? We were nominated?
We were nominated for that? Maybe we could have him come on out here. We'll take him over to Park Tavern. We'll get a little bowling action. I'll get you a free pitcher of soda. All you have to do is nominate us, Hollywood Foreign Press, for best. Well, because they don't have a radio category, so I guess we would have to wait. Documentary, and maybe that's it. We'll go into the documentary thing. We'll use the live stream of the show as our official entry. But you come to Minneapolis, boy, oh boy, I'll get you set up in a hammock by Bidet Makoska. We'll get you one of those one wheel boards. I'll give you a little. You can go hipster it up around all on the lakes. There you go. We'll get in Park Tavern. Go over there and enjoy some of that food. I'll take you. We'll go throw some rocks off the Stone Arch Bridge. That's always fun. See if you can hit the sturgeon. They're always that's always a hoot. And we can wine and dine. We'll be nominated for best documentary.
I'll bring the duffel bag of cash.
Well, no, we don't have cash, man. We what do we have here? I got some Lysol.
Yeah.
Maybe that might be the clincher right there in this day and age.
We could give them a one-on-one meeting with Mike Lindell behind us until they figure out he's still.
I'll get to Mike in a sec here. That's my next story. Gary is in Minneapolis. He wanted to chime in on something here. Hey, Gerber.
Hi, good to hear from you.
I'm glad you could take my call today.
Yeah, I just want to say something. You know, the red states are getting the worst of this beginning of this climate catastrophe. They're supposed to be getting worse in the future. You think they're going to finally wake up and realize it ain't a hoax? It's not supporting a party that doesn't believe in science?
No, I don't, because they basically are betrothed because they are betrothed to Republican voters. Thanks, Gary. I appreciate the phone call. They're betrothed to Republican voters. Right now, let me explain what the Republican Party is doing. And it's not just what happened in Texas. I mean, the Last Week Tonight just had a spectacular segment on the meat packers and how they treat their employees. And it's just very disheartening stories, to say the least. But modern Republicans, this is who they are. As corporate America, as the executives in these corporations are going out of their way to purposely hurt the employees and customers of their product, mainly through rules and things that have happened, which have been created via the laws and stuff like that, that have been put aside for in regards to the Republican Party. They've created this world that they can go on out there and you know, take advantage of their employees and their customers. The Republican Party, their main goal right now is to basically just look like they care just enough to where it looks like they're sympathetic for the customers and the employees are getting ruined by these corporations, but still not have to do anything to stop these corporations and executives from trying to kill their employees and their customers. So, I mean, that's the Republican Party today, and it really is kind of sad. 952-946-6205. All right, let's go to Mike. Now, I want to make sure we all mention here that weeks ago on this show, we had begged, we'd implored Mike Lindell, the MyPillow guy, right here, right over here. You see him right here? That guy, right there. You see that, right? Brett, yeah, you see him? He's right over here. You see him?
We got him, yeah.
Yeah, that guy right there.
Mike seems a little tense back there today.
He's stiff as a board. Sorry. Sorry.
Ball on the team.
There you go. Anywho, you have to be watching the show. If you're not watching the show, that's on you. You just missed it. Anywho, so Mike, he's been saying this thing about Dominion. And the minute, who is it, Sydney? What's her name? The lawyer for...
Oh, Sidney Powell.
Sidney Powell. Sidney Powell, I think, was the first person to get sued. Then Giuliani got sued. And both of them got sued by Dominion for $1.3 billion because they kept spreading this lie that Dominion basically stole the election from Donald Trump. And as a company whose job it is to make legitimate election product, they basically had a very viable argument that your lies, because they never produced any evidence of it. I mean, they went through the courts. They kept screaming about this in courts. The courts kept basically saying, there's no evidence here. Where's your evidence? And multiple times they got to a point and said, well, we need your evidence. And they said, well, we don't have any. But if you allow us to, we're hoping we might find some if we can just stop this and give us months to investigate it. And they said, well, no, I'm not going to shut down an election because you want to go on a fishing party and see if you can find something. And so Dominion had a very viable thing here. And since then, a lot of Republicans have kind of backed away since these lawsuits started getting filed. Not here in Minnesota. I mean, we've had a lot of Republicans here in Minnesota still screaming these lies about Dominion and stolen elections. Among the people who have been screaming about voter fraud and Dominion is Mike Lindell, the CEO of MyPillow, who has been one of the Trump's most stalwart supporters. Even at the very end, what was it, martial law was written on that piece of paper? They call for martial law.
Oh, is this where he basically got kicked out of a meeting?
Yeah, got thrown out of the White House because he was calling for martial law. Yes. A little bit of, slight bit of treason, you know. That's what he was suggesting for Trump to stay in power. We said weeks ago, we begged, we implored Mike. I said, Mike, here's the deal. Get the cameras ready. You're a big enough name. You can call all the Twin Cities media, the national media, even here, and get in a room and do one of two things. One, show your evidence that you insist you have that Dominion is doing this. And I mean evidence. You have to have strong evidence, which so far no one has been able to produce. And I'm not saying you don't have that evidence. I'm just saying you need to put that evidence forward now if you've got it. Because I don't want to see you lose your company because you get sued justifiably by Dominion for $1.3 billion. Or if you do not have the evidence, if this was just basically, I'm upset that they didn't win, my guy didn't win, then come on out. Just say, I'm so, so sorry. I was wrong. I was deceived. I apologize profusely to Dominion. It didn't seem to happen. We're suggesting you do one of the two. Now, in that time, Mike did do the OAN thing, where he went on the One America News Network and had basically an hour long, or it was, how long was it? Was it 3 hours?
Oh, this was like The Irishman, 3 hours.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, kept doing one of those things where, you know, it was, if this is what it seems like, it could be the evidence we want. Well, that's not evidence. And some guy, you know, and you know, these people that he had on that were kind of doing hypotheticals and this, even One America News was like, we do not endorse anything that's on this show. We are not, this is him. He's making these statements. This is not us. And he doubled down and he insists he has this evidence, which once again, from everything I've seen, is the same exact evidence they've tried to get into court cases, but the courts have laughed at them because they said that's not evidence. That's basically rumor mill stuff from the internet and social media sites. You're not going to be able to get a conviction with that. But Mike Lindell, this is the hill he decided he was going to fight for. And well, the fight has come to him. After threatening legal action for weeks, Dominion Voting Systems sued the MyPillow CEO, Mike Lindell, on Monday, seeking $1.3 billion in damages for promoting the baseless allegations that Dominion rigged the election for President Joe Biden. I'm reading out of the story from the Minnesota Reformer. The complaint filed in federal court in the District of Columbia accuses Lindell of purposely spreading false claims about voter fraud in the 2020 election in order to increase sales of MyPillow products. Well, I don't know if that's true. I know it was because he was there for his buddy, for Trump, who he looks a lot like Trump's dad. I'm just going to say, I mean, have you seen the photos? I mean, there's a lot of similarity there. But I don't think this is necessary. Did you ever get the impression this is about my pillows?
No, not really.
No. I don't know if that might be a reach. Reach for comment by a Reformer reporter, Lindell said he was pleased that Dominion finally filed the lawsuit by saying, it's a great day for America because the court will have to review his evidence of voter fraud. He also rebutted Dominion's claim that he was trying to sell more pillows. They say that I did it to get more fame. Well, I've lost 20 retailers already. We've lost our Twitter account. Dominion is shameful, Lindell said. Lindell declined to comment further on the case. A Reformer recently detailed multiple allegations of domestic violence against Lindell, which he denies. Dominion claims my pillow sales increased 35% to 40% as Lindell marketed his pillows to Trump supporters with promo codes like PROOF, Fight for Trump, and QAnon, and you and I talked about the QAnon coupon code. Really? As a way of duping people into redirecting their election lie outrage into pillow purchases. Okay. I do think this is a reach. I think he wanted Trump to win. I just think he wanted Trump to win. And because he's a guy that sits around and holds a pillow like a Bond villain holds a cat, you know, the media loves the guy.
Here, kitty, kitty, kitty.
Acting in concert with allies and media outlets that were determined to curry favor with one of their biggest sponsors and to promote a false preconceived narrative about the 2020 election, Lindell launched a defamatory marketing campaign about Dominion that reached millions of people and caused enormous harm to Dominion. Now, that might be the OAN thing. Because technically, I mean, if he bought the time on OAN, then that could be considered a marketing campaign.
I'm betting he had to have purchased that time. 3 hours? I mean, what TV network is going to give you 3 free hours of TV time?
Well, those self-lubricating catheters aren't going to sell themselves, are they? Oh. Who's advertising on OAN at this point?
That's a good point.
Even like the public service announcements are like, no, don't have to run us. No, yeah. Just during this commercial break, we're just going to show a picture of a fern that's in one of our offices for 3 minutes. We'll be back in a sec. That's OAN. I don't know. I don't watch OAN. I don't even know if I've got it on my TV. I probably do. I've got like 5,000 cable channels that I never watch.
I did find it on my Roku once. I never watched it. But
it's on Roku?
Yeah.
It's like, wow. That's sad in a way. It makes me cry on the inside. Lindell has been one of Donald Trump's most endearing supporters, meeting with him at the White House to strategize how Trump could stay in power well after the cause was abandoned by even Republican lawmakers and Trump by himself. The Minnesota pill mogul has been a frequent advertiser and guest on right-wing news channels like Fox News and One American News Network, which aired Lindell's documentary about 2020 voter fraud called Absolute Proof. It aired with a 90-second disclaimer saying the statement in the film are not intended to be taken or interpreted by the viewer as established facts. Okay. Lindell received a cease and desist letter from Dominion in January, the same month the voting systems company filed a $1.3 billion lawsuit against Sidney Powell, Rudy Giuliani, and promoted a similar baseless claim of a rigged election. It is... You know, I feel sorry. I really do. I actually do, to a point, feel sorry for him, and in the sense being that, you know, I just don't know if he's going to ever be able to. He's going to lose the company, isn't he? You know, He's going to lose the company if he loses this lawsuit.
Well, even if the total lawsuit doesn't end up being $1.3 billion, even if it's a quarter of that amount, that's still an enormous amount of damage to him and the company.
Yeah, I think that, and you know, he's not a big fan, by the way, of the Minnesota Reformer, which I love. I think is a great news outlet. He's not a big fan of them, and he had some choice words for them as well, which they talked about on their Twitter feeds today. I'll tell you what, we'll take a break because, you know, this is a sad story because there's going to be money involved here. And when you're talking about 1.3, I mean, how many hundreds of millions of dollars does Dominion need to get from him before all of a sudden MyPillow is gone? And that's a lot of Minnesota jobs. But if I may be so bold, presents a pretty fine opportunity for the DFL in the state of Minnesota. I'll explain that when I do come on back. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Pardon me while I cup Mike Lindell. Oh, you know what that's soft like? You cannot have props in the studio with me. You cannot do this. Come here, fella. Come here, big guy. Put your head on the shoulder there. There you go. Snuggle on in here. It's going to be okay.
We got to get a selfie of this picture here.
Yeah,
it's
going to be all right. Actually, I don't know if it's going to be all right, man.
I don't think it is.
I don't think it's going to be all right either. Why don't you take a nap? All right. Oh, wow, that hit his head. Ouch. There are a lot of people that actually work at his company that are going to be unemployed if this company goes down. You know, as much as he might not like me, this radio station, liberals, progressives, Democrats, at the end of the day, I don't want him to get sued because I don't think he's got a chance in this world of winning, defending himself in this case. And I think he's going to sit there and you know, we talked about this when Doug Wardlow, who's been on MyPillow legal team, is part of the reason why he's running for attorney general again, to get away from MyPillow so he doesn't have to be part of this because he knows this is not going to end well. I don't know. It's just a question I was asking in pure speculation. But if he loses his case, I mean, there's a good chance there's going to be a lot of people in Minnesota unemployed because of his just belief in these lies. And it's a very unfortunate thing when, you know, all of a sudden the judge rules, oh, by the way, all this evidence you have of voter fraud you insist is true, none of it is admissible in the court because it's hypothetical. It's not exactly reputable sources. There's a lot of reasons why they can knock this down. And there's going to come a moment, you know what's going to happen, where he's just going to be like, oh my God, what have I done? And I don't want you to lose your business. I mean, you go advertise. You're a private business. You go advertise wherever you want to. That's up to you. But there's a lot of people who work for you who are going to lose their jobs if this company goes down. I don't want to see that happen. And if there's any chance that you could just turn on the cameras and just say, you know what, I apologize. I'm sorry. I profusely apologize. Dominion, I realized that I was out of line, that the people that were telling me this was true, I couldn't trust, and I won't trust them again, and so I'm sorry. Let's move on. I really do hope that he's able to do that. I hope he's able to do that, because that would be your best bet at this point. Trump's not going to come back into office, and even if he could, he can't pardon you for a civil case. And so, you had your chance on OAN to put forth your proof, and there just didn't seem to be any proof. I mean, a lot of conjecture, and you saying it's the smoking gun doesn't make it the smoking gun. Not one person I saw that did a legal evaluation of your program said, oh, there you go, this is going to be it, this is going to be the proof. Not one legal person thought that. And it's going to be one of those cases where I think that at the end of the day, it's going to go bad. And so I feel bad. But here's where, DFL, you have a real opportunity here. Now, clearly, Wardlow, and he's going to insist I can't talk about it because I worked with the company. It doesn't mean you can't ask him about it. Do you think the election was stolen by Dominion? And as a matter of fact, there's a lot of Republicans in this state who have put forward this lie as, oh, it happened. Well, now that there are consequences that this Dominion is looking to sue, and they're suing deep and they're suing hard, you can basically bet that people are going to have to parse their words dramatically. And boy, oh boy, send the media out there. Every media person in this town should be, the second they can get Paul Gazelka or Kurt Dowd or Grand Canyon Carnahan or any of them on the record, you say, okay, so Dominion is now suing Mike Lindell because he said, they're saying that he's lied about this. You have not exactly shot down these arguments against voter fraud. Do you think Dominion stole the election? And watch all these people all of a sudden go from Trump was robbed to whoa. I never said he was robbed. I just said some people have questions. Well, I never said that what happened with Dominion was true. That was other people. I was just saying I thought that was interesting. But for the record, I don't think Dominion changed a thing. I think there's other things that I can question, but not Dominion. You owe it to us. Twin Cities media, news media across the state, you owe this to us. Get these people on the record, and then let Dominion decide if whether or not that they're damaging Dominion's reputation and suing them. I don't want to see Mike Lindell's company disappear. I don't. There's a lot of people that work there that they get paid pretty good too, by the what I've understood. But I think at the end of the day, unless there's something here that we're missing, and like I said, we said weeks ago, Mike, bring out your evidence. And if you have something more than what you put on OAN, you need to come to the light with that now. Because if not, then just learn to apologize. And maybe you can save your company. Maybe you can save these jobs. Maybe you can save somewhat a bit of your reputation on this. Because if you go in with the evidence that I think you put on OAN, the courts are going to basically say there's nothing here. There's no there. And even if they allow this evidence to get introduced into the trial, the Dominion lawyers will dismantle it profusely. Holy God, you will actually have on the record cross-examination which basically will erode every one of these points. Dominion is not joking around here. Have you noticed that Giuliani doesn't say a damn word about it anymore? You notice that Sidney Powell has basically disappeared from all existence since this lawsuit came on in? This is bad. This is bad. 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. Come on back. I got some police news I got to get to. It's a little bit interesting. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Someone, Ryan, asking, where did we get the cutout of Mike Lindell? It was not a grab and run at the MOA. It was one of our producers, Eric, when he was here. Yeah. He just went to a MyPillow store and said, do you guys have any of the cutouts? And they gave it to him for free. If I remember, that was the story, at least we were told.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Even if you have to buy them, they're probably not very much money.
No, I mean, I don't know. That's and it freaks me out because these guys have it right behind this door. I can't tell you how many times I've opened that door and go, ugh.
Oh, we do that to ourselves all the time down here where we'll put it in my chair in my office.
Oh, we need to take that upstairs. I got a few cubicles we need to leave that in.
Oh, for sure, yeah. Maybe in Jennifer's cubicle, we'll put one there.
Okay, the Laura with her show.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
All right. We're going to have some fun here because we're children. Bob is in Minneapolis. He wanted to chime in. Welcome on in, Bob.
Thank you. Hey, I'm right there with you with Mr. Lindell and hoping he can, you know, spin around and make his mea culpas and whatnot, save his company. But I thought there was some hope for him because back when I'd used to fall asleep in front of the TV and I'd wake up and there'd be these commercials on about his stupid pillows. And he was making these claims about, you know, it helps you get into the restive REM sleep. And I called up and it's like, what the hell are you talking about? Because REM sleep is dream sleep. Delta sleep is the type of sleep where all your stuff gets put back together and repaired. And once you know it, they stopped making that claim like a week later, at least from the commercials that I saw. So they must have had some legal beagles check it out and find out, yeah, we've been saying something that's been totally wrong all this time and changed it.
I'm not, and Bob, thank you very much. I appreciate the phone call. I don't know the ad you're talking about. I could have sworn that there was something that they were claiming in their ads they had to correct. I don't know if that was it. But, you know, any infomercial product, I mean, it will, you know, it's always like anytime you see a cooking informational project, one of the things I always find is hilarious is there's always like a lobster on the table, no matter what it is. It could be like a blender. And it's a blender. But hey, look, you make a lobster with it. How is that even possible? I don't know. And they will always, you want to sell the product. So I could have sworn there's something there. I don't know about that. I'll have to maybe take a look and see what that has to do. But thank you very much, Bob. I appreciate the phone call there. 952-946-6205. An Otter Tail County Sheriff's Deputy has been accused of being on drugs during an October 2nd, 2020 high-speed police chase that ended when the suspect crashed into another vehicle, killing a married couple. Kelly Douglas Backman, 43, of Vergas Falls, was charged February 19th in Otter Tail County with misconduct of a public officer and fourth-degree DWI in connection to the chase that involved a suspect named Cody Freitag. The chase ended with Freitag crashing into the vehicle of Stephen J. Christensen, 72, and Diane Christensen, 71, who were both killed as a result. After the crash, investigators asked Backman and fellow deputy Michael Wing to provide a voluntary blood sample, with Wing's coming back showing no alcohol or controlled substance in his system. The complaint states, Backman, however, refused to provide a voluntary blood sample. He did provide a preliminary breath test, which showed no alcohol, charges say. A blood sample was taken later, which was positive for alfarazolam, which he was prescribed, as well as a 3 milligrams of fentanyl and 1.7 milligrams of norfentanyl. It was determined Backman was under the influence of the synthetic opiate fentanyl At the time, he was operating his squad car, the complaint says. Investigators found some discrepancies involving Backman's work as a narcotics investigator, including him not logging drugs into evidence in two instances in August, hard to say. Meanwhile, investigators conducted a search warrant on Backman's desk and lockers, where they found a large baggie of glass pipes and grinders, a small plastic vial that appeared to be empty. In a temporary evidence locker only Backman had access to, the investigators found a Pelican-style case with burned tinfoil, a small plastic bottle, and a blue lid that contained a white powdery substance and a scale. Oh, this is ugly. If convicted, he faces up to 90 days in jail and a $1,000 fine for the DWI here. Now, the story here, it's his name is Kelly Backman, they say, but they keep referring to him as Beckman during this story in multiple points, so it's a little confusing. Backman, who was working undercover, attempted to buy controlled substances from Freitag at a convenience store in Fergus Falls as a ruse to arrest Freitag. When he spotted Freitag pull out of the parking lot, he radioed Wing, who approached the vehicle in his uniform, and Freitag took off. Freitag drove away at an extremely high rate of speed, with Wing following him. Backman followed behind Wig. Wig went in to follow Freitag around a turn, but he hit a curb, which disabled his vehicle, charges state. Backman continued in the pursuit with his lights and siren activated. He was about 2 to 3 blocks behind Freitag when they were going upwards of 70, 80 miles an hour, noting Freitag was driving dangerously and he was not stopping at stop signs. Then, at the intersection of Cavour and Union Streets, Backman saw a cloud of dust and figured Freitag had crashed. When he approached the scene, he saw Freitag crashed into the Christensen sedan. The pair later died in the hospital. Meanwhile, Freitag on the ground near the passenger door of the van had been driving, charges say. So here you've got a case. And once again, when you talk in absolutes, you generally have a problem with reality. And the people that talk in absolutes are Republicans and the conservative side. And the way that they say, you know, all police officers are good cops. Never a bad cop. Never. You can't question a thing that they do. Well, this is disappointing to say the least. It's, you know, clearly Otter Tail County is going to get sued by the Christensen's family. I'm going to presume. There's also going to be, I imagine, a look into any case Backman was involved in Fergus Falls in that area over the last few months. And I'm going to say this because I get so damn tired of these Republicans pointing to Minneapolis and say, you need to clean up your city. Hey, Fergus Falls, you need to clean up your damn town and you need to clean up your police officers because you guys got a mess on your hands up there. This is an absolute freaking mess. And there is not going to be any easy solutions here. And if you want to go with what the Republicans truly do worship, this is going to cost a lot of taxpayer dollars. Trust me, by the time we're all done here, there's going to be a lot of taxpayer dollars in that county going out the door. I have a bad feeling about that. But obviously, the investigation continues. There's also this interesting little nugget that comes out of Red Wing. The ongoing conflict between Red Wing City Council and its police chief has resulted in the firing of the town's top law enforcement official. On Friday, the council voted to terminate Chief Roger Pullman, who had served the city in that role for 8 years. According to a letter from the city council to Pullman, which is now circulated among a number of news outlets, the move was a disciplinary action over the chief's alleged failure to meet performance expectations. The council cites a lack of trust, failure to support city initiatives, and Pullman's alleged portrayal of council members as anti-police, amongst other complaints. So wait a minute here. This seems like it's similar to other stories I've heard where when the city council wants to impose some new rules on police officers, the police themselves call them anti-police. That's what it sounds like, at least. Now, the vote to fire him. This was not like some 5-4 vote. It was 6-1. So a good chunk of the council wanted him gone. So something clearly was going on here. Star Tribune reported on that. Once again, the vote to remove Pullman was 6-1. The lone holdout, Councilman Kim Bicey, saying he couldn't support the move because the council did not give Pullman a chance to address alleged shortcomings. Red Wing Mayor Mike Wilson echoed this, telling the paper he believes it was a mistake to fire Pullman. The firing comes a week after the council placed Pullman on leave for unspecified reasons. However, as the Republican Eagle noted at the time, the conflict arose from issues such as social justice and community policing in the wake of George Floyd's death. Okay, so I think we're getting an idea of where might have been the conflict, at least. Fox 9 notes that Pullman released a statement following this termination saying the council had decided in secret and behind closed doors to move in a different direction with the city's police department and gave him the option to resign and retain some benefits. Okay, first of all, let me stop you there. In secret, well, they had a city council meeting and they voted and, you know, that's, you know, it's, I don't know if, you know, yeah. You saying it's secret as we read about the vote in the paper doesn't make it nearly as secret as you think it is. And so I don't know about this, but they did give him the opportunity to resign, retain some of his bennies. My oath of office to the community and police department is not completed. Therefore, a resignation was not an option, Pullman said per Fox 9. So basically, they gave him a way to get out and keep some of his benefits, but he decided against it. Prior to Friday's vote, a number of community members expressed support for the chief with a letter to the editor in the local news site calling Pullman a true public servant and a great police chief and accusing the council of micromanaging police affairs. Oh, okay. It's always terrifying to me when you have a society which basically says any overview of the law enforcement by the official city council is, let me say this, micromanaging police affairs. Because that's how you get police officers who basically rule towns. All right? I don't know if that's necessarily the right thing to do. Also weighing in was State Representative Barb Haley of Red Wing. In a letter to the city council last week, she criticized the body for placing Pullman on leave without a clear explanation of why the decision was made. She also defended Pullman's record and character, calling him a fair, honest, professional, and committed public servant. A public Facebook group has been spun out of the wake of the controversy titled, I Stand With Chief of Police Roger Pullman. Well, you can stand that all you like. He's been canned by 6-1 vote. He didn't take his benefits, so he's gone. Do you think that all of a sudden, on a 6-1 vote, that all of a sudden you're going to be, well, I guess we're going to have to hire him back? No, you do have a responsibility for city councils to overview this stuff, and clearly something, 6-1 votes. And like I said, this wasn't like a 5-3 or a 5-4 vote. This is 6-1. And it seems to me that there's something happened here. And we're eventually going to find out what really did happen, whether or not the city council of Red Wing overstepped their bounds, or whether there was something else going on here that made canning this guy a no-brainer. But, you know, it's going to come on out because, yeah, something's not adding up here. And I'm getting the idea, and once again, I want to make sure I say this. The Republican Eagle noted at the time the conflict arose with issues such as social justice and community policing. So it's my way or the highway, kind of one of those things. I'm going to guess the conversation like that happened. I don't know. I can only speculate, pure speculation. But something happened. 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. Come on back. Final segment. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show, Native Roots Radio. I am awake. Up next, Robert Pilot and crew. Make sure you stay with us through the evening hours, especially now that it's starting to stay lighter later. That's very nice indeed. This last story here I want to make sure I talk about is that, I mean, we talk about supporting local. And there is this movement out there, especially from these delivery services like DoorDash and Grubhub, Bike Squad, others, that they present themselves as buy local with us. Well, you're not really. And as a matter of fact, there is a way to make sure money goes to the local business. Call the local business and get the food directly. That's what I always do. I do not use these services because when I go to, say, someone like a Park Tavern and I want to go get some food, I want Park Tavern to get all the money. And there's an article that was released that talked about this. We've all been there this past year. You don't want to cook. You want to save your local restaurant. So you take the path of least resistance. You use a third-party delivery service. I don't use a third-party delivery anymore because I know too much. If you knew what I knew, you wouldn't use them anymore either. I don't think the average consumer knows what a mess these delivery platforms are creating for local food establishments. These tech companies, that's what they are, not restaurant companies, have found a way to convince customers to overpay for food at the same time gouging restaurants masked as relief, all for the benefit of creating a tech company that has struggled to turn a profit because others are racing to control this lose-lose space. It's a racket with no winners except for a few financial players who turn quick deals to their own advantage. Restaurants pay between 22 and 32% of the menu price of an item in order to use a third-party delivery service. If a restaurant sells a cheeseburger for $12 on their menu, under these contracts and arrangements, the restaurant receives only $8 of that. If you ordered the same cheeseburger and picked it up yourself, you'd pay the $12, and the restaurant would get the $12. See how that works? There you go. How or why are restaurants actually view a third party taking 32% of each transaction a positive thing? As restaurant owner, I've never made sense to me, and I was a skeptic from day one. It leaves nothing to the restaurant but hopefully a small amount of exposure, and as we've all learned pretty quickly in this climate, restaurants don't need exposure. This actually brings up a point I have been... I want to make sure everyone... You got a cell phone. If you're driving your car, don't look at your cell phone. You're not supposed to do that, all right? But you've got a cell phone here, okay? When you say the term cell phone, the second word in this is phone! It's a phone!
What?
There's a little icon here on the bottom here. You can hit that, type in a number, and actually talk to another human being. I know! There are way too many people that, I frankly just don't think through the process and say to yourselves, oh, well, if I hire a third party, how is the restaurant getting paid? And not realizing they themselves are paying more money than if they called the more than likely they're paying more money than if they called the restaurant themselves and just ordered the food directly from the restaurant. And yes, that might mean you have to dial a phone number and actually engage in a quick conversation with another human being. But that's how you do it. And as this chef points out in this article, guess what? When you buy from the restaurant that you're going to go use a delivery app for directly, they get all the money, not just a portion of it. If you want to save local businesses, that's what you do, okay? I know, Brett. It's the more you know, rainbow graphic. Let's do it, dude.
These phones, I can make calls.
Yeah, apparently so. I don't know. I'm still playing Tetris on mine. Can you even find a Tetris? Can you even find Tetris on the app? I bet there's like 8 versions of it in the App Store. So call, support local business by actually going to the local business. Thank you. Back tomorrow. Have a good one. Until then, see ya.